if you know that the path of Buddhism is a path of training, so that through the developing of wisdom, of understanding the truth of life, the truth of our hearts and minds, that stage by stage we can get illumination and enlightenment. Enlightenment being that final breaking through the clouds or the veil of ignorance or delusion, so we can see this world, this body and this mind as it truly is. And through that insight or that enlightening wisdom, then we become the perfected being, the enlightened being, and as such, someone who has reached the peak of what human beings can achieve, has reached that happiness, that bliss, which was the same as the happiness and bliss of the Buddha himself. This is like the path which we teach in Buddhism. This is a path which has been trodden by monks, nuns, men and women for over 25 centuries. And the important part of this path is that the conferring, if you like, of ultimate happiness and peace is gained especially through the arousal of wisdom, for understanding. Not conferred as a gift through some sublime being outside of oneself. Not given by another, by a human being, some initiation. But going through one's own efforts. But opening the mind to that wisdom which sees things as they truly are. And because of most human beings do not see things as they truly are, you will hear in talks about Buddhism and you will read in the book about this word which we call sometimes illusion, sometimes we call it delusion, sometimes we call it ignorance. And in this evening's talk I wish to explore and describe what this ignorance, what this illusion or delusion really is about. That which blocks one from being enlightened. That which is the cause for people being separated from this bliss, from this happiness, from this peace. It actually is illusion, or delusion, or ignorance. Now, I mention this because I've read in some books, heard some teachers explain illusion in a very strange way. A way which would not meet the approval of the Buddha himself, in a way which causes some unfortunate consequences in people's lives. I have read or heard that some people apply this word illusion too broadly to things which only create confusion and also irresponsibility in people's lives. I remember even as a young Buddhist, talking with my friend over a cup of coffee, saying all is delusion, all is illusion. So why bother doing anything? If illusion is so widespread that it counts for everything, then even goodness is illusion, even morality is illusion. And one comes to the point where wisdom itself is just illusion as well. That pain in others is delusion, and so why be compassionate? That all-encompassing, all-spreading, wide illusion, or idea of illusion, tends to make one just be irresponsible and not taking up the duties and burdens which one should be taking up as a human being, whether as a man, whether as a woman, whether as a monk, a nun, or a Buddha himself. You may look at another human being, and if you have this metaphysical idea that all is illusion, you can see that their pain is just that illusion and you will not help. Now this is certainly not what we mean by illusion in Buddhism. This is not how the Buddha taught. And I make this point because the path of Buddhism is a very responsible, very moral, very compassionate path, which takes these qualities of morality, of compassion, and of wisdom, both as the path and as the goal, the means and the end. One develops virtue morality, until it becomes second nature to you. You develop compassion until it becomes a natural response to being with other people, to being in nature, to being part of the world, of the cosmos. And one develops wisdom as a natural result of the opening and the unfolding of the mind. These are things which come quite naturally. And these things are not abandoned at any stage of the path, but are developed to ever greater degrees of fulfillment. And so when we talk about illusion and delusion, it doesn't mean that one rejects the reality, one rejects the use, and rejects the purpose of these things. That is not what illusion or delusion means at all. The way the Buddha used this word delusion or illusion, I mention these words because I have to sort of give a wide meaning to this word to include many things, but not all things. The way the Buddha used this is especially in not knowing the difference between these two very simple things called happiness and suffering. That this is the greatest delusion of a human being. And the reason it is the greatest delusion of a human being, because if you do not know the difference between happiness and suffering, you're getting confused, and seeking for happiness, you'll only find suffering. And we will all seek for happiness in our lives, but how many of you find it? How many of you know the secret of happiness? How many have attained to happiness? Surely one would think, if one really did know the difference between happiness and suffering, and one did know what happiness truly was and how to attain it, then one would be happy. And a happiness which lasts. Not the happiness which comes and goes so quickly in this world. Not the happiness which is there for a moment and then slips like sand through the spaces between one's fingers. Not happiness which we try to grasp like a person tries to grasp the wind and can never catch it. But a happiness which is there in the palm of your hand, there to be enjoyed, there to be stayed with, embraced with, and absorbed into. This is a happiness which the Buddha was talking about and said existed, not as an illusion or a delusion, but as real. Certainly you should know that enlightenment is real and is certainly not an illusion at all. And understanding that the main aspect of delusion is not knowing the difference between suffering and happiness brings to mind the core teaching of the Buddha, which was the Four Noble Truths. Four Noble Truths, which is not the subject of this talk this evening, so I'll only mention them briefly, are the description and explanation of what suffering truly is. The description and explanation of what the cause of it, why we suffer, why we meet pain and disappointment often in our life. And the affirmation that there is, in reality, not as a delusion or an illusion, a true state of enlightenment which, as human beings, each one of us can attain. An atonement which transcends being a man or a woman, a monk or a lay person, an Asian or a European, old or young. An atonement which is open for everybody. A real attainment, which means that it is possible in this human life to attain to such a state of happiness and peace, such as the mind will never again be shaken and will always be at peace no matter what you have to face in life. And the Fourth Noble Truth was the way to do this. And this Four Noble Truths, the Buddha was talking about mainly suffering, but in understanding suffering, or this word we call dukkha, one must also understand its opposite, which we call happiness. Indeed, the truth of happiness is embodied in this Third Noble Truth. The affirmation there is a thing called enlightenment, nibbana, the end of all suffering. And what is the end of all suffering? It's nothing less than ultimate happiness. The trouble is, the Buddha says that people keep getting reborn and going through problems and troubles and difficulties. The crying and the stress and the pain in the heart, let alone the pain in the body, the pain in the heart comes through not understanding what happiness is and what suffering is. Through not understanding the Four Noble Truths, the Buddha said. So the first part of delusion, and perhaps its most powerful, is just this. Taking suffering to be happiness. Okay, taking suffering to be happiness, and one can start to point to those things in one's life which brings about suffering. They say that the things which bring about suffering are caused from attachment. Now why do we attach to things in this world? Why do we attach to one another, our health, our fame, our wealth? Why do we attach to these things? We only attach to things because they think it will bring us happiness. It's the only reason why we attach, is because we take this as a way to be happy. We think that the partner we're living with is essential to our happiness. This is just an example. And if we attach to that partner always being there, we are flying in the face of what life can really provide. And in the end, we're letting ourselves in for the suffering which is born of inevitable change. A change which must bring about the separation of people, the separation of things. As a Buddha once so profoundly said, all that is mine, beloved and pleasing, will one day become separated from me. This is truth which we cannot deny, but which we can hide from and forget. It is truth which we forget, which we call ignorance. We ignore them, we don't feel sad to them, even though that we know in our hearts they must be true. Because if we really remember these things at every moment of our lives, how do we ever get attached to this deluded view that these people and things will always be there? However would we get the view that these things are mine to control and to keep? It's when these things which we are attached to as ours are taken away from us by the force of nature, or just by the force of change, where we feel what is called the suffering in the heart, when someone close to us dies, or when someone close to us runs away, when there's a parting in a marriage or a relationship, or even when children go off on their new lives outside of your home, with other people in different states, in different countries. These separations and partings which cause an ache in the heart. These are inevitable. So why can't we face up to them and learn how to live with them? Because sometimes we deny truth out of fear. Out of fear for the consequences we think these events will encode in our heart. But the Buddha said, no, if we face up to the truth with courage and with honesty, then instead of experiencing suffering, we'll experience a great relief, peace, and contentment. You know, you cannot fight nature. You are not strong enough. You are not a god who can control this world. You cannot sort of control your own life and health. And certainly you cannot control the people around you. Nature works in spite of you. And if we can learn to work with nature and live with nature and accept nature, rather than always fighting it and wanting it to be different, then of course we get peace and happiness. Fighting battles we cannot win would only give frustration and then depression and great sorrow inside of our hearts. So instead of denying the nature of life, we face up to it and accept it. And this is called wisdom. It's a breaking through of ignorance with the courage of our devotion to truth. And let's see what the results will be when we face up to it in this way. An example which I have often given is that when one understands the transience of all things, the fact that whatever is beloved and pleasing will one day become separated from me, if one accepts that fully into one's heart, what are the consequences? The consequences are that when you know the person you're with is not always going to be there, that you will care much more. That the time you have together will be more precious. That you will put forth more effort into every day, even into every hour and every moment. It's only because of the ignorance of time passing that we take our days for granted and we take our time together for granted. And it's only because we think this person is always going to be there that we allow ourselves to get angry through petty little irritations. If this was the last day you'd have together, would you ever get angry at the person you're with? This is your last day. You can take that as a rule of thumb to guide your lives. Every day is your last day together. And that will make each day so much richer, more wiser, more mindful. And one day it will turn out to be the true fact. And so if one does treat every day as one's last, how much richer, more energetic, more kind and peaceful and compassionate we will be. And so this is just an example of what does happen if we give up our ignorance and remember the truth, that all that is mine, beloved and pleasing, will one day become separated from me. So what does that mean? That today I must care. Today I must put forth effort. Today I must try harder, because the time is always running out. So what this does is actually uplifts the mind and creates greater peace and joy and happiness. And of course, when the nature runs its course and the separation does occur, we know that we've never been heedless and that we've enjoyed every course of a meal put before us, and we haven't lost the chances that life has afforded. And that gives the sense that when things pass away, that we have no guilt, no sense of remorse that we haven't done our best and lived our time to the full. And also it gives this acceptance that we know this has to happen, and we do not blame others, nor do we blame ourselves or some great God in the sky. Why did this happen? Sometimes we may scream this in our heart. Why did this happen? Trying to blame somebody else. But when we know this is nature, when we overcome this ignorance of thinking someone's to blame, we all understand this is the nature of things. Then this acceptance gives us peace. And this peace gives us happiness. And so this is an example, just an example, of what I mean by ignorance and delusion. This hiding one's head in the sand and not facing up to the true nature of things. Now this true nature of things is not hard to see when it's pointed out to one. But we keep forgetting. And why is that? We keep forgetting because of the power of our habits. To the power of our searching for things we can never have. I don't know, when you were young, what did you want to be when you were very young? Whether it was a train driver, or whether it was a rich person, or whether it was someone who opened the batting for England or Australia in a test match, or whatever. These desires that some people have, they can still carry on later on in their lives. I was told that there was one monk, an English monk, not me, who was in Thailand once. He visited his home in England. And he was like cricket, And we started thinking, he was 30, that if he just arrived soon, he could still put in enough practice and still open the batting for England test team. This is wonderful thinking that some people can even have. When one really looks and thinks just how impossible it is. And can you see that these desires and aspirations which you might have, which you know, if you look clearly, you will never achieve. I remember one lady coming to see me here. I think she was, as I say, sort of touching 50. I think she touched it so close. I think she was probably on the other side. And she was telling me that she still thought that there was someone out there, the man made for her, this perfect being. And the only thought was she just hadn't found him yet. After 50 years, no matter what I said about wishful thinking, I couldn't convince her that this perfect man, this good-looking, rich, sort of everything she'd ever wanted, was just waiting for her there. And it's sometimes that these fantasies which we may have, we take for reality. And what's going to be the result of this? Disappointment and depression. So we have to understand about ignorance and not facing up to the truth, the reality of life. Once we face up to the truth in reality of life, then we get rid of a lot of disappointment. We know what life can give, and we take it as it comes. We take it with gratitude and with wisdom and with peace. And when life turns sour and we gain disappointment, we know that we can expect these, but we also know they won't last. And so we can bear with the dark and the bright, the happy and the sad, because we know this is the essential nature of the world. We know that there's no way that we can always get pleasure, that we can always get whatever we want. We know that sometimes we achieve these things, but sometimes we will have to bear the things we don't like. And so when we know this, what does it do to our minds? It teaches us tolerance. Tolerance, this marvelous acceptance of things we don't like. This ability to be at peace with things we disagree with. Because we know these will come inevitably in our lives. Well, we know these things that will come inevitably in our life. We know that we have to train ourselves to be able to endure. And it's only through endurance that we can become tolerant. And when we become tolerant, we'll be able to live at peace in the hot weather of the day as well as the cool. We know that this will happen no matter where we live. Sometimes we may think, when we've had a hot day, wouldn't it be nice to go overseas? We may think of these beautiful places, some South Sea island, where the temperature never gets above, say, 25, and at night it never gets below 24. And there are only rains in the very early morning, and every day is so sunny and bright. And when the people are just so kind and living simply, and there's this coconut falling from the trees every day. Not realizing that in such beautiful paradises where the temperatures are so nice, and where the soil is so rich, that so many things grow so well. But even such places that the mosquitoes and the snakes also like to live. They want to go there and they get there first. And where do you go? There is something wrong. And so one realizes, wherever you go, there is something wrong. But one has to learn tolerance. As if either mosquitoes or the heat or the cold or something. There's always something wrong wherever you go. And there's always something wrong in the partner you choose. There is something wrong in the job where you work, in the government which runs your country, and even in the talk which I'm giving. When you're losing your truth, there is something wrong. And if you look for perfection, you'll be looking, as Ajahn Chah once very eloquently said, you'll be looking for the turtle who has a moustache. Go and look and see if you can ever find a turtle with a moustache. And you know the waste of time and waste of years. So instead of looking for perfection in this way, because of our understanding, because of the abandoning of this ignorance and this delusion that such a thing can occur, we learn about tolerance. And we find we can start to accept disagreeable things. You know, a person who can accept the heat and the cold of the weather in Perth, a person who can accept the flies on their face and going up their nose, is also the person who finds it very easy to live with another person, who can have a happy relationship with another man or a woman. Why? Because sometimes, like living without a purse, is like having a fly go up your nose. Sometimes there are those things which really irritate you and you wonder why. Now, what has the fly got to do? What business has it up my nose? There's no food up there, it's not its home, and it's going to probably come to a terrible end when you sneeze. So what's the point of it going up there? And sometimes the things that irritate us, we can't see the point. Why did he do this? Why did he say that? But when one can tolerate the difficulties and sufferings of nature, one can also tolerate the people one lives with. One is developing this tolerance. And we talk about tolerance, and I keep banging home this point. Tolerance is the ability which we gain through training of learning to be at peace with things we don't like. Tolerance is not learning to be at peace with things we do like. That's not tolerance at all, that's easy. It's being at peace with things we disagree with, we don't like, but we know we can't change. So we, as we go in jail, we cop it sweet. We learn how to live the things we don't like. And then we can learn to live with all sorts of people. We can learn to live with the heat and the cold. We can learn to live with people dying and passing away. We can learn to live with terrible diseases which cause such pain. And we can also learn to live with our own death. And tolerance is peace, which we gain through insight and understanding. So this path of Buddhism teaches us tools. It gives us means, such as these talks, such as these teachings, such as the practice of meditation, to open our mind to the truth of the world and to abandon this ignorance which crowds our mind and causes so much problem. And even though these means, these tools, are not ultimate reality in themselves, what's the matter with that? Just because these tools are not ultimate reality, but these tools themselves, they shouldn't be thrown away and caused this delusion. The practice of meditation or the practice of virtue or these talks, these teachings, whether they're from the Buddha or anyone else, neither throw them away, teaching their illusion, neither take them as ultimate truth and worship them at all costs, but using this tools to open up your own heart to the truth, things to be used and work with and developed. And how does one know if one is using them well? If one is skillful with the hammer and the saw and the plane, one knows one is skillful not because what one's teachers say, or because one thinks one is, but one knows one is skillful by the carpentry one produces. If one knows the use of these tools, and of Buddhism, or of any other celestial religion. If it provides peace, wisdom, compassion, and the sense of freedom and tolerance, then one knows one is using the tools well. So never think that tools like morality or meditation need to be thrown away. They are tools to be used to create peace and harmony and happiness in your life. And as we develop these tools, we understand even deeper meanings of this thing we call ignorance. Because so far I've only talked about the ignorance which stops people having a happy life, or a reasonably happy life. There are deeper levels of ignorance or delusion which we need to uncover to gain these great wisdoms which lead to full enlightenment. These illusions which the Buddha taught are four in number. And it's very useful to know exactly at the profoundest level what the Buddha explained as ignorance or delusion. I've already mentioned one of them, this taking what is suffering to be happiness. And I think you may all understand the consequences of that. One searches for happiness and finds only suffering. Why? Because one has taken as happiness that which is suffering. The second of the delusions which the Buddha proclaimed was to take that which is impermanent as being permanent. As much of life we think is always going to be there, and we forget, because of delusion, that things would always change. The buildings which I've worked on at Serpentine Monastery will one day crumble to bits, whether it's in my lifetime or afterwards, I'm not to know. A bushfire could sweep through, and this weekend there'll be no monastery left. If I take these things as being permanent, then I'm always going to suffer. Not only that, but I will not look after the monastery building. Because I know they're impermanent, they're vulnerable to disaster, I take care. But if they do go, I thought so one day. I expected it. And therefore, one doesn't suffer. Suffering will come when one takes that which is impermanent to be permanent. Even your own existence in this body, do you really understand and accept your mortality, that one day you can die and you never know which day that will be? If you can understand and accept that so deeply, your life will be richer, free of fear, and when that death finally comes, one can accept it with this great peace. If you can accept your own death, you can accept that of others. And you can be one of those people in this world who's at peace at Calcutta or Fremantle or wherever it is. The tears will dry up when you understand about life. This is the freedom from grief and suffering and pain. And wouldn't that be a wonderful gift to be given to each person in this world, and especially to be given to yourself, an escape? The Buddha once said, in all the lives which you've lived before, he said this to all of his audience without exception, saying that you've cried more tears than there's waters in all the oceans. That's a lot of crying which we've all gone through. When will that crying cease and end? I'm not talking about just the women. The men have cried before me many times as well, in the pain and the grief of a parting or a disappointment. When will those tears finally end? Those tears will end when we stop taking that which is impermanent and changeable to be permanent and stable. Where we'll be able to accept the flow and change that is life, accept it and go with it, neither fighting nor resisting. And so the second of the delusions which the Buddha taught is a delusion which takes that which is impermanent to be permanent. The third delusion which the Buddha taught was that which takes the unbeautiful to be beautiful. That which doesn't make this purity and beauty to have this purity, this beauty. And one can understand this, especially young people, young men and young women, being attracted by the outer appearance of the human body, thinking here is beauty and purity. And how often do people fall in love and think the other person is the most beautiful and pure-hearted person in the world, and we become terribly disappointed much, much later. And I'm not so saying that accepting the ugly spots in the person's body or the little niggly parts of their character will stop people living together. I'm saying that accepting these from the very beginning will be accepting life as it really is and getting rid of a lot of disappointments which may come later on. You're facing life as it really is, as it truly is, rather than covering it up with a facade of delusion. One sees there is no such thing as perfect beauty or perfect purity in a human being. There always is something, somewhere. There's a story which always brought a smile to my face. This was recorded in the Buddhist time of a young man who wanted to become a monk. He wanted to become a monk very, very badly. He was so inspired by the Buddha's teachings, but he was the only son, and his parents were very wealthy and very, very attached to their only child. And so, no matter how much he pleaded, his parents said no. And in the Buddhist tradition, you cannot become a monk without your parents' permission. And his parents said, why do you want to become a monk anyway? Look, you have all this money and wealth and power. Look, what do you want? And we'll give you anything you want. And he said, yeah, you give me anything you want. He said, look, anything you want. He said, well, look, if you don't give me what I want, will you let me become a monk? He said, sure, that's my promise. And so he asked the beautiful wife. He said, surely we'll be able to get you a beautiful wife. Describe her to me, what colour hair, what shape, what colour her eyes, what height and what breadth. And he gave this description of the sort of wife he wanted to have. But the very last quality of this wife, which he demanded, his parents weren't able to fulfil. They were able to find a woman of the right colour hair, of the right family and right wealth, with the right character and nature. But the one thing they couldn't find was this, because he asked for a woman who would not fart. Excuse me, but that's exactly what it says in the text. And no matter where they went in the realms of India, they couldn't find a woman like that, nor could they find a man like that. And so in the end, they had to let him become a monk. Now that's just an example which shows you that whatever one has in this world, there is something wrong. Some part of it which lacks purity and this absolute beauty. And the Buddha says this is the other delusion. Thinking there can be absolute purity and beauty in this world. And when we understand this, again, it gives a sense of acceptance. So whatever there is which is pleasurable and delightful in this world, to any of the senses, will always have a part of it. Right next to it, right inside of it, which you may call ugly or depressing. That beauty and ugliness will always be side by side. One will be more prominent and the other may be hidden, but they'll always be there together side by side. And when we see this, the beauty and ugliness, the delightful and the unpleasant, will always be side by side. Will we ever get attached to people or things? We only get attached to people or things, the external shape and appearance of life, when we don't understand that, and we take that which is not beautiful, not pure, to be something else. So that was the third delusion which the Buddha taught. And the first delusion which the Buddha taught, this is one of the deepest and most powerful and hardest to uncover, is seeing the self when there's no self there. Seeing a person inside when there's only emptiness. And to understand this delusion, we come across what the Buddha taught as illusion. That delusion is something which tricks the mind. An illusion is the trickery itself. Because the way the Buddha tried to point out this very hard and very profound root of delusion was by describing the body and the mind as composed of five things. When he looked at the person, the human being before you, and whether that's of any gender, male or female or age, or any class or caste or country or whatever, he sees it is made up of the following five things. First of all, there's the material body itself, the arms and the legs and the bones and the blood and all the other things which make up the human body is one, the body. And the second thing was the feeling, or what I call primary perception. The first reaction of the mind when it experienced the world through any of the six senses. For those of you who knew the Buddhism, the five senses of the Western world of sight, hearing, taste, smell and touch have also the sixth sense of the mind. Because Buddhism recognizes, and it can be experienced for oneself in deep meditation, that the mind can exist without these other five senses. The mind can be operative even though one is hearing nothing, seeing nothing, tasting, smelling or touching nothing. It's a sixth sense which is apart from all the other five. And so this is the first perception, this second part of that which makes up the person, the primary perception of sensory experience. You may notice this little simile, when you say step on a stone, the first thing you know is not what you stepped on, but ouch. The pain or the pleasure which arises in the mind is the primary perception of the working of the human mind, human consciousness. This primary perception is necessary to protect the human being. You have to know whether this is painful or pleasurable immediately to protect your existence. And this primary perception gives way to the secondary perception in Pali called Asanya, which gives you more details of the experience you're undergoing. When you step on the stone, it gives you this first feeling of ouch, and the next thing you do is look what it is. Oh, it's a stone, not a snake. It's not so much of a problem. Or it's pleasurable, or it's dangerous. The second perception is the next part of the mind. And the third part of the mind is the thinking and the dealing with it. The mental formations around our experience. When we step on a stone, we start thinking. Once you know it's a stone, you start thinking. Maybe a cow's been on it. Maybe I'll get tetanus. Or maybe I won't be able to go out tonight. Maybe get infected. Maybe I should get a plaster on this. You start thinking, this is not the last time this happened. No, this happened to me last year over in Thailand. I remember when I stepped on a nail in Thailand, it went right through. I said, oh, that really hurts. And I had to go to a doctor. And his name was Moore Charlie. Dr. Charlie, his name was, in this town. And you can see just how the mind just goes off in thinking. This is called mental formation. And this takes up the greatest space in our minds. And the last thing which makes up the mind is consciousness itself. This whole operation of sensory experience, including the mind. Now, when the Buddha taught about these five things, what I call the body, primary perception, secondary perception, mental formations, and consciousness, he showed that this includes everything which goes on in the human body, the person. That there's nothing apart from these five things. And when we start talking about these five things, we start to point out each of these things. We said the body was just like froth on a Ganges. Froth, imagine froth on a turbulent stream. There's nothing to it, it's just many, many bubbles stuck together. Bubbles of emptiness, which we suppose to be something solid, something real and everlasting. Froth doesn't last that long on a river, it soon, after a while, disappears and goes away. Just like this body of ours, knowing it's like froth, and nothing sort of permanent or solid, will give us the result that we become caring but detached from our physical body. We'll care for it and look after it just as we'd care and look after our car, knowing one day we'll end up on a scrap heap. And we don't really attach to it, so when it's on a scrap heap, we have to keep on possessing it. And this is the body, he said, this is the illusion of the body. It's just like froth on the stream. The illusion of this primary perception, he said, is like rain falling on a puddle. There's a small bubble appears on top of that puddle, just for a moment, and then it's gone. This primary perception, this first experience of pleasure or pain, arises so quickly and then passes away. Sometimes when we don't know this, all we see is a bubble, 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 and we think it's all pain. And the pain is continuous, is an illusion which we can discover if we investigate our mind. There's no such thing as continuous pain, but just the arising and passing away very quickly, like the old-fashioned movie, which we take as continuity, and this is the illusion. And we look upon the secondary perception, which the Buddha said was like a mirage. Like a mirage on a hot day confuses, we think this is real, but it is only the work of the senses. This illusion of beauty, of permanence, this illusion of something which will bring us happiness. This is the work of, this is the third part, the perceptions going on. Perceptions is what gives a label to the experience before us. Beautiful, ugly, I like, I don't like. Delicious, horrible. Have you ever tasted frog soup? Yuck. Why is it yuck? Have you ever tasted it? How do you know? You can see how perception deludes our mind. Instead of experiencing life as it is, so much of our perception is bound up with our preferences, with what we think the world is. And if we taste frog soup, we know it's awful, don't we? And therefore, how do you ever notice reality with that preconception, which will delude the mind? And that's why the third part of perception is a mirage. We see what we expect rather than what's there. The fourth part of the mind of the person is the mental formation, the thinking, which goes on and on and on. In the Buddha scriptures, he called us like a plantain tree, that is banana tree, which would peel the leaves and there's nothing in the center, no pith like an ordinary tree. But when Venerable Gunaratana, this marvelous Buddhist monk, was here earlier on this year, instead of using a plantain, he'd like to call it like an onion. If you peel an onion, there's nothing solid in between. You can peel the layers off and off and off, and you never come to anything which you call a heart. Something essential and solid in the center of it. And that's just like this fourth part which we call the thinking. But moreover, Venerable Gunaratana pointed out that an onion is something which goes on and on with an eye in between. It's a very beautiful little sort of simile, an I, a person, a self in between, and goes on and on and on. That's your thinking. And the last part of the illusion is the consciousness itself. It's a Buddha called a conjurer. Conjuring up the images of self and me and mine. And the Buddha said, this is the illusion which we have to uncover. The illusion of our body and of our mind. Taking it to be something it's not. In particular, taking it to be a self, a person, something solid. Because if we take it to be a person, a self, and something solid, we have something to protect, a vested interest inside, and something which controls and manipulates our world, a driver of the bus, rather than a passenger in life. A passenger is someone who is not attached to the direction of the bus. A driver is someone who always has to work, who always has to take the complaints from the passengers as well as the train, and who is constantly in control and feeling frustration. When we understand the illusion of the ego that is in our person, then this gives rise to such an enormous sense of peace and freedom, which we call enlightenment. So this is the way the Buddha taught to enlightenment, what he meant by illusion and delusion and ignorance. To sum up, we have the first part of ignorance, which takes that which is suffering to be happiness. We don't know where to find our happiness. And we don't know the rules of life and what nature can give us. And that's where much of our suffering and disappointment arises. And then we find the deeper reasons. We find out exactly who we are, what we are, and what life is. And when that delusion is overcome, peace arises, as well as virtue and compassion. What we give up is the delusion that that which is suffering is happiness. We know what true happiness is. We give up delusion that can be beauty and purity. We know what true beauty and purity is. It's deep peace and calm in the mind. We give up the delusion of permanence in that which is impermanent. We know that that which is truly permanent is Nibbana, enlightenment. So we know that which is non-self is a true path of happiness. These are the delusions and ignorance we give up. We do not give up illusion or delusion just by being mindful. Mindfulness is not enough. Mindfulness is the path, a very important path. But it must always come with the opening of the mind to truth. And with mindfulness and the opening of the mind to truth, we will see the world as it truly is. Not as we're told it is, not as we think it is, not as we want it to be, but as it is. This path takes great courage, great honesty, a commitment to truth. It is not easy to overcome illusion because you don't know it's there. Only afterwards does one know, ah, I couldn't see. So that's the talk this evening on the Buddha's description, explanation of illusion, delusion, and ignorance. Has anyone got any questions about the talk this evening? Is there any questions you have? Are you all enlightened? No more delusion? I just mentioned that illusion or delusion is given up slowly, drop by drop. You have to be patient. As one looks within, meditates, and empowers the mind, the insights will arise at all stages. There will be times of great insight, but they will always be supported by the different insights of life. And the sign of true understanding will always be seeing something which one never expected. That is a sign of a true insight experience. And one never expects to see this way to happiness. But bit by bit, drop by drop, because of the carrot of one's own inner peace, taking you further on this path, drawing you to wisdom, to truth, to peace, that ignorance and understanding will be removed, strip by strip. On drawing aside the curtain, one just takes it apart, thread by thread. And this is the way, the path the Buddha taught. So, if there's no other questions, not even one question, we may be finished this evening's talk. Please wait for a few moments because there's one or two announcements which should be made now. And hand over now to Jill, who is our president this year, to make these announcements this evening.
Thank you, Ajahn. Good evening, everybody. Excuse me. To narcissism and egotism, I have certainly seen a taste of summer. And it's nice that the call is bright and airy for us. Just a couple of things, a couple of announcements, you know. I can also let everybody know that there will only be one more Sunday school class for this year at Church for Children's Grammar School, and one more of the yoga classes, which reopens on the 15th of January. And Sunday school will begin again on the third Sunday in January. One of the wonderful things about being part of a multicultural society is that you get to celebrate the New Year several times. And in this society, we get about three of them. So apart from the one on the 1st of January, is that you also have a chance to celebrate Chinese New Year. And if you've been to the Chinese New Year celebration that we have at Tamalaki, you'll know that it's great fun and it's rather a wonderful evening. I don't know what to say about it. It really is quite special. It's very fantastic and it's terrific. We'll be celebrating that this year on the 28th of January at 6:30, and the venue, of course, is here in our community hall. Tickets are on sale and will be on sale from the reception desk tonight. But we're also looking for people who are willing to take books of 10 and sell those tickets to their friends. And it's a lovely opportunity to be able to bring along perhaps even people who don't normally come here, to enjoy a fun evening with lots of great people and terrific entertainment. And if you'd like to take one of those books, if you see Sally's on the reception desk tonight and Michael, who is organising it, they'd be happy to give you one of those books. So I hope you join us for a cup of tea or a cup of coffee and a chance to meet some new people and catch up with old friends in the Dharma Hall afterwards. If you are new here tonight, for the first time, we give you an extra special welcome. And if you'd like to speak with me or one of the children you're looking, you'll see most of them except me wearing a badge. I can't find mine.